The hottest team in baseball back in action tomorrow night in Denver, taking on the Rockies. The Padres have won 13 of 15, and we're with you for the next hour here on the Padres Collective. We appreciate your support. We should get to 2,000 subscribers tonight. We're pushing 1,900, so I'd say between the start of this episode and by the time hopefully tomorrow rolls around, if you're watching on replay, hopefully we'll reach 2,000 subscribers. So please do subscribe. We're here for you year-round. If you're a Padres fan, and smash that like button for us, we'll get your super chats tonight. I want to say, in the insanity of the last time we did a show, Kevin was down at Petco. They overcame that like four or five run, six-run deficit that night. We appreciated those super chats. I don't know if we ever got to them. We'll take some time here towards the end of the show to get to your super chats tonight. So click the dollar sign below the chat box if you want to support the channel, if you want to see your question on screen, if you want us to get to it. John Schaefer and Kevin Acey and Matt Devine with you for the next hour. And gentlemen, great to see both of you. And just in general, it's been pretty remarkable, from the 2-5 start to 13-2 in the last 15. And now the elevation begins. 3 games in Colorado and 2 games in Mexico City. And we'll see what that means for the hitters and for the pitchers as this road trip continues. But I hope both of you are doing well.
And a lot of fun because a lot of stuff has happened. Like, from my perspective, is that I just want stuff to happen. And the Padres have not disappointed pretty much at all this year.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, Kev. Great to see you, John. Great to see the chat, as always. Man, lot more fun doing these episodes when the boys are rolling, right? So excited. Obviously, the House of Horrors, Coors Field, is coming up tomorrow. Been some classic games there over the years. So hopefully – I see the Dodgers are beating up on the Rockies bullpen a little bit right now. So hopefully we can get to whoever's on the bump tomorrow. And, hopefully we can get our big dogs swinging the stick before Mexico City, where, if you think Coors Field is crazy, Mexico City was wild last time we played there.
It's insane. Kevin was obviously there 3 years ago. I was just there with my wife randomly, just taking it in. We went to one of the two games. That first game, I don't fully remember it, other than there were a lot of home runs. I do remember that. And I know Tatis homered there because I looked it up today. He had one home run in those two games. I know Tatis' lifetime, obviously, in Colorado has been sensational. So we can get a little bit into that. I had Kevin on the radio today on 760, Schaefer and Sliwa. And I started the conversation, Kevin, and you can re-clarify for those that missed it. Like, I'm just like, how are they 13-2 in their last 15? We talked about Machado and Merrill and Tatis, and there's been some positives in there, but by and large, not to the expectation that they'll have for the entire year. Pitching, Mason Miller clearly has led the way. They've had some timely hitting as well. But is it surprising, watching it up close, that they've been able to do this without those massive numbers from some of the key cogs?
It is. And they're waiting to score. They're getting, really, you could say, dominated by starting pitchers as often as not. And so there's just like all these ways you're going, yeah, how are they winning? Now, if you look deeper, like, there have been big hits by Manny, big hits by Tatis, big hits by Merrill, and those three guys are struggling. You look at the overall numbers, you look at the slug, but there have been big hits. Xander Bogaerts probably better than you would have expected, about probably as good as you could have hoped, in particular big hits. And then the bottom of the lineup. And if you're asking for a deep lineup, then the Padres are delivering so far. But, like, I am... If you're wanting to be encouraged, then be encouraged by the big hits that the big boys have. If you want to say, it's a little too early, yeah, the big guys have to produce. They don't have to carry the team. There is no rule that says that as Manny Machado goes, the Padres go. It has been the case in the past to a large extent, but it's like, there are other players on this team that contribute, but you are not. I just don't see how you are going to be the team you want to be without Manny hitting better.
Yeah, I agree completely with what you're saying, Kev. I think the offense can really be summed down to the fact that although we still aren't hitting a lot of home runs, Ramon leads us with 4. The big dogs, when you think Jackson Merrill, Tatis, Manny, I guess you could put Xander in there. Not a ton of homers. The slug still isn't incredible. Ramon's the only one with a pretty solid slug right now. What's really great, and Clark Fahrenthold, who is a writer for Mad Friars, tweeted this earlier today, and I really like this. He said, San Diego Padres offense in high leverage at-bats this season. 166 weighted runs created, second in baseball. A 1,000 OPS, second in baseball. In a 413 weighted on base average, second in baseball. That's as simple as it is. We're coming through in big spots, right? There's an argument that says hey, are we just going to be like that the entire season, or are we going to kind of middle out to kind of where our average is? That's a real argument, but I really do like seeing the depth of this team. And if there's a guy, if the three guys that I'm quote unquote that people are worried about are the three guys that I know are going to put their numbers up, I think this is a pretty good team. For example, last year we were 14-3 to start the season. Tatis was like the MVP that we all think he's going to be. He had like a 1200 OPS. He was balling out. This year we are 15-7. And I would consider our three big guys, Jackson Merrill, Tatis, and Manny, if you ask them, underperforming their numbers or what they want to be at. So if water finds its level with those three, I think this could be a really special season in San Diego.
It's kind of funny. You go to the like high leverage, like clutch, dynamic of it, because I would agree. I go back to this past series in Anaheim. It's like the Angels had chances that they didn't capitalize on in close games, scoreless games, 1-0 games, first and second, nobody out, or runners in scoring position with two outs for good hitters. And they didn't capitalize. Now, some of that is the Padres pitching staff, which has been obviously very good. I mean, the pitching staff in general, whether it's, even the rotation conversation or the back of their bullpen, we'll get into Mason Miller, obviously, later. He's been historically good. But, there's so many ways you can look at like a season or a game. And it's like, do you come through in the clutch? And does the other team, fail to come through in the clutch? And I just looked at that Angel series. It felt to me, Kevin, like I've watched that series before where I've seen the Padres lose two out of every three, and that'll happen with consistency. Like, man, they had a 1-0 lead, but they just didn't find a way. They just could not finish a team off. But that's kind of where the Angels are sitting right now, where it's like, yeah, the Angels have scored the Padres in the series. That means nothing, obviously, in baseball, but they score 8 runs in one game and then they lose 2 close games, but the Padres win the series. I just think that's a credit to the Padres. It speaks to who they are. That's what AJ Preller has built. He's built a team that is supposed to hold small leads, and it feels like by and large they've been able to do that.
Yeah, look, if you're going to continue to have good at-bats, right, like arguing in the beginning of the season that, hey, it'll come around, that applies to, like, clutch, too. If you are going to continue to put yourself in situations, right, I'll argue that it can be just as good to go 2-for-17 with runners in scoring position as 2-for-3 or 2-for-8. You gave yourself time after time opportunities. You're probably going to win most of those games. That's just how it works out. And then they haven't. I love that stat that Clark. I love that that you pointed that out. Clutch. You don't want to count on it. You don't want to count on it month to month. You don't want to count on it year to year. The big boys get paid to be good in the clutch, so it's good that they have been, like I pointed out, big hits, but they've got to be better. They just do.
Yeah, I mean, and I think they will be, right? And we say it all the time. Anyone could have a good month of baseball. Until I don't see Manny Machado put up the stats that he's done his entire career, Fernando Tatis Jr., I know everybody wants to see the home runs. I do believe they're coming. I feel like every episode we come on here, I say that, but I do believe it's coming. I'll follow sometimes if I'm not watching the game, I'll follow the game on the Real app. And they do a pretty good job at, tracking pitches and exit velocities and everything like that. For a free app, I really enjoy it. And you'll see, and it's like, in play for Tatis, in play out, and it'll be like 374 feet, hit 107 miles per hour. I mean, if you keep doing that, sooner than later, those are going to turn into extra base hits. It's not like he's like, weakly grounding out to the left side of the field. Like he's really putting some good swings on it. Jackson Merrill, another example, tough game on his birthday, but overall, man, that guy is a good player and he's going to put up his numbers. If your big stars are the ones that quote unquote aren't performing up to their level and you're 15-7 and the hottest team in baseball, if I was a fan, I mean, that fires me up, to be completely honest. I'm very impressed by the offense. I'm very impressed by the depth I get from this offense. I feel like and we always compare it to 2024 because that was such a special run, especially the second half of the season. What was awesome about 2024 was the depth of the lineup. It didn't feel like any half inning, we could get a rally going. Last year didn't feel like that, to be completely honest. There's a lot of black holes in that lineup. It seemed like, some of the games, they were kind of going through the motions. I think Kevin, you or John mentioned on the last episode that we'd be down like 2 runs in like the 7th and their relievers would just go 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3. I don't think that's the case anymore. I truly don't. It showed in that Seattle series. The Angels series was a great example of how even when you don't have your best stuff, good teams win series like that. You ask any player on that team, that was not their best series. Offensively, I honestly, it was just really, really impressive to see them pull out those victories. Bradley Rodriguez stepping up. People have been stepping up all season, and it's been really fun to watch.
I want to, what do you got there, Kevin?
Well, I like that the Padres are the team that take advantage now. They've taken advantage of so many mistakes, forcing the issue with base running, forcing the issue by being disciplined at the plate, taking advantage. The Angels didn't commit any errors per se in this series, but they made some boneheaded plays. And that, if you're a Padres fan, you remember, oh man, so close to beating the Dodgers. And then there was a play in the seventh inning, the Dodgers freaking stepped on your throat and then cut it and then kicked you in the ass. Like that is what the Padres are doing more often over the past couple of years. They did it to the Rockies. They came in here. Oh, look how good the Rockies are playing. The Rockies are crap. Like they might be better. They have better players. They make dumb mistakes. They're the same Rockies. Okay. Now look, that's going to get blown back in my face because they're going, as you called it, the House of Horrors. Like every AL West team, like you don't get to go in and beat up on the Rockies at their place because this place is such a nut house that anything can happen. But anyway, the Rockies just aren't very good. The Angels just aren't very good. And the Padres also have been taking advantage of that, and that to me I have seen over the years is a sign of a good team.
We are two subscribers away from 1900, so if you are here right now for a first time, please subscribe and smash that like button, and we will get your super chats. We'll get to them at the end of tonight's video, so if you have a comment you want to see on screen, if you've got a question for any of us, click the dollar sign below the chat box. A great way to support the channel. I'm fascinated by what's to come with these games at Elevation. Again, they play Coors every year, obviously. But to go from Coors to Mexico City, on one hand, you've got this offense that hasn't completely turned over, although to some extent has. And then on the other hand, you've got a pitching staff that by and large has pitched effectively. So now, like, does the shoe fit on the opposite foot, so to speak? And what does this really mean for the Padres as a whole? I made a point today on Schaefer and Sliwa. It might be a dumb one, but I'll make it again anyway. That I'd almost, if someone told me over the next five games they could go 4-1 by winning 4-3-5-4 type games at Coors in Mexico City, that's challenging to do, specifically Mexico City. I'd be like, yeah, it's great. You win 4-5 games. It's terrific. I'm like, you know what? I'd almost rather see him go 3-2 and get Machado cooking, get Tatis going, get Merrill. And you know what? If you lose a game 9-8 and your starting pitchers for back-to-back days aren't effective, again, I don't think that's really a reflection of who they are because of the factors that are at play. At the end of the day, they'd probably rather go 4-1 than 3-2. But I'm just curious to see how this all plays out. It feels like the Elevation comes at the right time for the offense. We'll see what it means for the pitching. And Mason Miller, can you keep a streak like this alive, pitching at an average elevation of 7,000 plus feet over the next five games? I think all this is pretty fascinating to watch play out.
Yeah, we talk about this altitude every time almost, right? Like that the team is going to play. And a lot of times it doesn't play out. I will say, like, we're probably set up for a letdown because of that first game in Mexico City where the humidor hadn't been set properly.
Interesting.
And, you know, I mean, it was just insane. The most insane game I've seen. And I used to cover, I covered the All-Star game in Coors Field in 1998, before, you know, when the balls and the players were juiced. But that game in Mexico City was like, wow. It was so fun because you knew, all right, this is a one-off. We're out of here. Well, the next day, the shadows creeped in because it was a late afternoon start. They got the humidors fixed. If you looked at what the Astros and the Rockies did in Mexico City the next year, it wasn't that great. But still, 7,300 feet is 7,300 feet. And so we're going to see some offense. And I am very, very interested to find out what happens over these. I can tell you this. When I talked to Manny yesterday, he was stoked. Like, there was no hiding it. He didn't even try to mess around. Usually he'll bust my balls for 2 minutes before giving me the answers that I want or that he's, you know, wants to give. He was like, this is going to be effing great. He is because both he and Tatis were like that because basically they're desperate. I'm making that word, not them. I'm just telling you, like, they are just like salivating at what's coming up these next 5 days.
Hey, if Nelson Cruz could hit a home run for the Pods,
you know, he's got five hits.
I think Tatis can. Love both your points, John. I loved your take on like the 3-2 versus 4-1 if we get Sabats going. It's early. You said this, Kevin. I think you said it in one of our first episodes of the season. It's been about two NFL games worth of games so far, right? Mm-hmm. Like the worst, the Mets lose 11 straight. We've seen crazy. It's very early in the season, right? If we can get these guys going, bats-wise, the Mannies, the Merrills, get them a little confident, get them hitting for some slug, that would be, music to my ears. Because I know they have it in them. It fires me up to hear Manny's excited about that. It's just going to be fun, right? Those games are fun. I think this is a good baseball team. I think the lineup itself, if there's one area of concern, and it's been the area of concern for the last year plus, it's the slug. Let's see him slug a little bit. I want to see some homers, Kevin. Who's our third base coach now? Giving some high fives.
Bob Henley.
I want to see Bob Henley giving some high fives. I want to see, all of us hitting our prize picks lays for the home runs. I want to see the vibes are high. But I'm very excited. You watch a team like the Colorado Rockies, right? You get to that pen, we're in a really good spot. Really good spot. Am I expecting Randy V to throw a perfect game tomorrow? No. Just give us a shot. Give us a shot, right? Just hang in there. Shockingly, the worst pitcher statistically in the last like 10 to 15 years at Coors Field is on the IL for us, Nick Pivetta. Nick Pivetta is historically bad at Coors Field. I think he has a career like 16 ERA. So as much as I miss Nicky P, maybe not for this series. I'm excited for both these series. It should be a really good time.
Now, what about the pitching? First off, so the offense goes off in these places. No guarantee it's going to stick. Right. And what about the pitching, which we're all really concerned about, or we should be if you're paying attention. I just wanted to say, we'll see.
The only thing I want to see is Mason Miller's scoreless streak remain intact. I mean, that's one of those things that I think is important for, I think it's important for Padres fans. I think everyone kind of understands what he's doing is special. He's almost transcending the position. I don't know if it's like a national sports story, but it kind of is. You watch PTI, they're like Cy Young worthy, yeah. Otani or Miller, and it's like April 15th, so the Miller thing, I mean, you kind of take the step back and look at where that scoreless streak is, not just in Padres history, but among the great, maybe recent streaks or really even all-time streaks. And like your mind starts to wander a little bit. We talked about it today, Kevin. We're like, well, there were two on the other day. That alone should have been cause to put him like on the IL. but isn't part of me is like, this guy's not like, it's going to be hard to score off this dude, all season long. But on the other hand, it's like, single walk, and now all of a sudden you're a base hit away from a run scoring. I'm fascinated by that scoreless streak. And then the Tatis thing, what's interesting about Tatis, he's been fine, right? I don't even think it would be a topic of conversation if 20 games in, he had two home runs and was hitting 250-something, one or two more RBI. You wouldn't even be talking about the things that we're collectively talking about. I wonder if actually the way he's hitting even translates right now to Coors or to Mexico City. Kevin, you wrote a little bit about it today. He's been good enough at the plate. He's using the opposite field. He's driving in runs, but I don't know if what he's doing right now is automatically going to lead to a homer or two or three over the next four or five games. He's almost like a different version of himself right now, and he's trying to find the version that is also in there that can hit for the power that we've seen before.
He gets a little bit under some. I agree. I think you're right on, but he gets a little bit under some. Then the way that he's hitting, it translates. It really does. I've just come to really believe in what he's doing. That said, he needs to hit some home runs. Yeah. But I do. I think it's fascinating when you watch him. But I'll tell you what it could be. About 8 doubles and a triple at Coors Field, because the place is gigantic. It could pinball around if they haven't changed the turf at Mexico City. I don't know if you remember that. That was almost old school, like Three Rivers Stadium with the hard turf and balls bouncing over outfielders. Like he could run all over Alfredo Harpelu Stadium or Estadio Alfredo Harpelu. I I really do believe in what he's doing. And I want to hear what Matt has to say, because I could not agree with you more. Even from my perspective, where I have no skin in the game, what I'm rooting for is a good story to be done by deadline. And for good stories is what I'm rooting for. And Mason Miller's an amazing story. If you love sports, you should want this to go on. The dominance is unreal. 9 balls in play this season. Like, 2 of them have been hard hit. None of them at 100 miles an hour. We all know the 71% strikeout rate. 2 walks, 2 hits. It's just unreal how good he is. Where you remember Robert Suarez, really good closer, kind of an adventure.
It's not even remotely close, Kevin. Come on. I love Robert Suarez. He was a great closer for the Padres. He was awesome, and he's doing really well in Atlanta. And I'm happy for Bobby. He will go down, obviously, the Harper moment. But other than that, like, you know, Robert Suarez was a good San Diego Padre. What Mason Miller is doing is unheard of. I've been watching baseball. I'm about to turn 30 my entire life. I've never seen anything like it, to be completely honest. Like, there's been some incredible closers, the Marianos, the Trevor Hoffmans, Francisco Rodriguez back in the day. Like, some really, really good closers. You watch this guy come in the game, man, and it's just different. Von Grisham yesterday legitimately looked like if they picked me out of the crowd, 3 Modelos deep, saying, "Hey, you're up against Mason Miller." Von Grisham looked scared to be there. He threw a slider. Von Grisham legitimately looked like a fan taking an at bat. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. And what's even crazier? Do I even think seeing him do that? I'm like, yeah, I kind of get it. You know, it's like this guy is doing things we've never seen. 102 miles per hour on his fastball. Nastiest slider I've ever seen. Him coming in the game. We're playing the Angels yesterday. Did anyone on that field, anyone watching that game, think he was giving up a run? No. The guys batting legitimately were like, "I don't want to look stupid." They weren't like, "How do I get on base to win this game?" They're like, "Please don't hit me. Like, don't hurt me. And please make me not go on like a, you know, Sports Center because I look stupid on the slider." They don't even go up there thinking they're going to get a hit. And people call me a homer, and people are like, "Oh, all you do is, you know, hype up the Padres." It is the craziest thing I've ever seen. He goes into the game, like, he gave up, I think there was 2 runners on Saturday. And people in my comments are like, "What's wrong with Miller?" Guys, you realize that happens. Like he is still, even though he sometimes doesn't seem like it, he is a human being. He bleeds the same blood that we bleed. You know, he eats food. He does these things. He looks like a machine sometimes. And, you know, you really go to think of Lourdes Gurriel Jr. hit that home run against him, the second time outing as a Padre. Since then, I mean, is he going to give up another run this season? He will.
No.
I really don't believe he's not going to give up a run. But, man, would it surprise me if he gives up more than 5? Probably. Like seriously, he's really that special.
Well, first off, I would have to be 3 Modelos deep to even consider it, right? Like I at least, even if you gave me $1 million for one at bat against him.
Oh, man, I'd be so scared.
I would have to be. And I will agree with you that they look that way. I don't know that they're scared, but even Mason Miller has had to acknowledge, yeah, the batters look different right now. That's the kind, what he said is, that's the kind of streak I'm in. What he's saying is, that's not always how it is. That's not always how it will be, but that he can feel it on the mound right now.
Yeah. One of the great wonders of the world is, how did Mason Miller have a 3.16 ERA with the A's in his career, which is what he had. Here's the thing. Mason Miller, to me, is like, what I watched Victor Wembanyama the other night.
Yeah,
I'm like, this guy doesn't look like the NBA guys. I mean, not just his size, but when you have Tim Duncan and David Robinson looking at each other with a quizzical look, and they're Hall of Famers, like top 50 players of all time, like, you're literally on another planet. And that's Mason Miller to some extent with what he is doing right now. I've also reached the point where I'm looking up what quantifies the ending of a scoreless streak, because this streak is so magnificent. Like, I looked this up last night. I don't know if Kevin, if you've probably have already done this, but like, the scoreless streak ends with your last scoreless inning. So like, you could throw a third of an inning and give up a home run. You don't extend a scoreless streak another third of an inning. I don't believe. I looked it up because I was so curious about, and the way he, and we'll say, how did he get to the two thirds of an inning? Well, he's had four outs in an outing, or, you know, five outs in an outing, and so on and so forth. Anyway, the point is, I've looked up top 10 scoreless streaks. We all know about Hershiser. Like, where is he? I mean, the third longest scoreless streak in baseball history, I want to say, is Bob Gibson. It's like 40 something innings. So like that, just consider that. It's not to say he's going to get there. It could end in a blink of an eye. And it's just special, and enjoy it, because you can't assume he's going to do this every outing, every year. There's just no way I buy that that's just who he is, or it's even possible, because it's Major League Baseball. But what we're watching is special and should be celebrated and enjoyed. And I think Padres fans are.
Question for you both. Oh, sorry, Kevin. New owner comes in. Realistic expectation that they try to extend Mason Miller?
Yeah, I mean, there will be talks, but I don't know that Mason Miller would have, or his agent would have any interest in that at this point, because the Padres would have no motivation to reach what Mason Miller will make. Now, their motivation will come into play in that he is going to break records in arbitration, right? So, like, you got to consider that this guy's going to make that kind of money. But absolutely. But you've got Adrian Morejon, Mason Miller, perhaps even Jason Adam, because the combination right now is, like, that's a winning combination. Like,
really,
you know, I'm a guy who's like, oh, relievers scare the crap out of me. But these three guys are like, Adrian Morejon's on his way to being Jason Adam, but nastier. And when I say that, I mean that Jason Adam has been consistent for 5 years now.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've already spent a lot of time talking about Mason Miller. We could have done the whole podcast on Mason Miller, but we probably spent enough time. I think that that's something that'll happen, but there's those talks happen all the time. I just don't see the motivation on Miller's side, other than to say this: one of the most down-to-earth guys ever. His backstory, meaning that he understands how lucky, like, when you understand what I'm saying with lucky, the guy has earned everything, but he understands, like, how this might not have happened if not for basically a miracle drug test, trying to get a job. And, you know, finding his diabetes and all that. And, like, I could see Mason Miller, if the money were up high enough, but not bank breaking, I could see Mason Miller going for that. I just think we're a little early on that.
Makes sense.
My hot take on that, by the way, is, do you even need it to do it? He's signed through 2029. We understand how pitchers, you know, just the, I don't know, the arc of a pitcher's career, it's rare. Again, yeah, there's Trevor Hoffman's and Mariano Rivera's. There's guys that can pitch to that level for 10, 15 plus years. It is absolutely possible. But there's many more examples of the example of the elbow. The shoulder is the scariest part for me of any long-term deal with a pitcher, because the shoulder basically ends everything. I mean, they can do whatever they can do, and but you're never going to be the exact same. Even the elbow, the amount of time that it takes, it's so concerning. That's just, listen, he's going to get some of the greatest arbitration numbers in the history of the sport, obviously, presumably even greater on the other side of the CBA. They're not going down the arbitration numbers, but he signed through 2029. For me, it's a conversation in like 2027, 2028. I just think 2026, I don't know if it works for either side, truthfully.
I think there's higher priorities, and that includes Morejon, but also because he's signed. But, man, you made me think, you know, Mason Miller is also, he's a pitcher, man. He worked working in that changeup, the slider, like, is ridiculous. Like, Mason Miller's a pitcher, man. I'm very interested to see, because you know how I am about whole Hall of Fame or greatest ever talk. It's like, even for this greatest ever streak of, you know, whatever it is now, 29 games, way too early, but I am so fascinated to see where Mason Miller goes in his career, because I think he does have the capability to be a 15-year guy. And even when he's back down throwing 99, you know, like Aroldis Chapman, I think he's got the ability to be that guy.
Real quick on that, Dan Zimborski, Fangraphs, I had him on the radio. He came up with like Zips projections. He's just an analytic guy. He still, he within the last week was like, maybe it's the analytics in me, I still could see him starting in the major leagues. I'm like, wait a second. The greatest closer in the sport right now. And you like, so again, careers are long, you know, organizations change. in that, you know, maybe the Padres wouldn't consider doing it, or maybe something changes if you lock up a player long term. But like, just the idea of Mason Miller being anything like this for 5, 6, 7, 8 innings, just the idea of it is compelling. Again, you'd never want to mess with perfection. Like, if everything's working perfectly, why even do it? But, you know, I mean, these crazy front offices have crazy ideas as well to maximize these players and their impacts. Again, it's not a conversation for 2026, but it's probably an interesting conversation. It's probably not the last we've heard of the idea of Mason Miller ever starting again in the major leagues.
It's fun to have a bullpen where, you know, yesterday, for example, and I got to give Craig Stammen credit, right? He puts Kyle Hart in that spot. Kyle doesn't have it. He takes Kyle Hart out. Some old managers probably keep Kyle Hart in a little too long, and we probably lose that game, to be completely blunt. Craigie Quick Hook is what my brother was calling him. We got him out of the game. Bradley came in, got the job done, had a great eighth inning. Guys are stepping up, man. Our bullpen has been awesome. You know, I do know that Herman Marquez pitching in Mexico City might be, you know, there might be some, might not be July 4th, but there might be some fireworks this weekend. But, you know, it's hard to not be happy with what we're seeing out of the San Diego Padres right now. And it is fun to see, you know, a legendary stretch. Like, this is a stretch we'll talk about when we're older for sure.
I might not be talking to you, Matt, but I might be talking to some people when I say, when I expand on your point there, where you talk about Craigie Quick Hooks and how like hopeless it was. And the Padres were going to be the worst team ever when Craig Stammen admitted it, leaving guys in too long. And that how could a contending team have a manager that was had a learning curve? And he admitted he had a learning curve. And now they've won 13 of 15. Sure. And when was the last time that Craig Stammen, you could even argue that Craig Stammen left a guy in too long? I think there have been a couple with starters, but it didn't hurt him. Yeah. And that's the funny thing about a manager's decision, right? Like, I'll write it down in my book so I don't forget it. Oh, hey, I wonder why this guy left it in, right? And then it works out, and maybe you ask it, but you're not asking it like, hey, you screwed that up, manager. So Craig Stammen has been on the learning curve, but I'm super impressed with how quick that learning curve has been.
He looks confident when he's in the on the bench too, man. Like, I feel like, and I know it sounds funny because I mean, Kevin, you're like seeing it, you know, firsthand. But as someone that just watches the games on TV, you know, the cuts to the dugout, he's always blowing bubbles. He's always, you know, cool, calm, collective Craig Stammen, man. He seems like, even from the first week to now, he seems like he's starting to feel a little bit more confident when he's like making decisions. It just seems like it's coming a little bit more naturally to him. And obviously the winning helps, but I agree with what you said, right? Keeping guys in too long. What I remember, the first thing that comes to my mind is Kyle Hart against the Giants at home, left him in one extra inning instead of, you know, probably pulling him after two. We lose that game. Vibes are low. Pretty much since that game and since that Giants series, this team has been on fire. So you got to give Craig a lot of credit.
Let's get back to this conversation in a moment. We do want to thank our title sponsor here on the Padres Collective here tonight, which is Prize Picks. Let's set a lineup right now, and then let's remind you to use our promo code HMA. You play $5, you get $50 instantly in lineups. Matt, I'm going to start by deferring to you. We've got Padres Rockies pulled up for tomorrow. Are you feeling Randy V more than 4.5 strikeouts? Are you feeling that in your bones?
I mean, I would love it, but I don't know if that's where I'm going at. I think it's going to be I think tomorrow has all the makings of a classic Coors. I was watching the Rockies today against the Dodgers a little bit, and it was looking like a launching pad. So I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of total bases, a lot of overs on that. So
you want to go more than 1.5 total bases for Tatis? That doesn't require a
home run. Give me more on than Tatis, more on Merrill.
More on Merrill.
Merrill's a 450 hitter there. Only has one home run, but he's a 450 hitter there.
Yeah, I love Merrill. And then I can see Sheetsy going Yard, but maybe not. I know Yard's always a tough one. And then I always like riding for the San Diego guys. So I'll say Mickey Moniak to get a hit.
Mickey Moniak. Yeah, that's right. Former first overall, right?
Former first overall pick. La Costa Canyon High School, baby.
He does really well against the Padres, often at Petco Park, but nonetheless, he does pretty well against the Padres.
You guys ever see players when the Pods are playing where you're like, I have a feeling this guy's going to be a Padres uniform one day? Mickey Moniak's at the top of my list where I have a feeling he will be a San Diego Padre one day. I don't know when. I don't know what part of his career. I don't know what position, but I do think I could see him in brown and gold one day.
When I watch the Padres, I have a feeling all of the other teams are going to be Padres one day. Like, when I think about AJ Preller, I think about all of these players one day ultimately playing for the Padres, not necessarily in their prime. By the way, if you hit this pays 5.75 to 1, by the way, on this power play here on Prize Picks. That's how simple and easy it is, by the way, guys, to create a lineup. Use our promo code HMA and play $5, get $50 instantly in lineups. Again, use promo code HMA, play $5, get $50 instantly in lineups. All right, let's get back to this. By the way, if you missed it earlier, we'll get to all the super chats. We see four or five in there. We'll get to them at the end of the conversation here tonight. Be patient, I promise. That's the format of the Padres Collective. So we'll get to your super chats. If you want to get those in, click the dollar sign below the chat box. We are 88 subscribers away from 2,000 if you are here live. So please do subscribe to this channel, approaching 2,000, and smash that like button for us as well. Let's transition just to the health of the Padres. You know, heading into the back half of April, yeah, things are going very well on field, obviously, but they are without Nick Pivetta, which could be significant depending on how lengthy of a term he's going to be out here. So, Kevin, what was the latest? I don't even remember. Like, the best case is the month plus, and the worst case is we're talking about it, you know, into the second half of the year, I would guess.
Worst case is that he's back with the Padres because they picked up his option for whatever it is because he was on the IL for 130 days.
Exactly.
That's the worst case. But yeah, let's say worst case in season is, you know, we're talking about, gosh, I wonder how many innings Nick Pivetta can go. Is kind of, you know, if he comes back late enough, you're like, okay, when's he coming off that rehab? And are you going to get 5 innings from him? All right, okay, you're going to have Nick Pivetta for 4 innings in the playoffs. That's, you know, I think maybe what you hope for at this point. Joe is still completely up in the air. Griffin Canning should be back. I mean, will be back in May. It's a question of when. Do they want to say, hey, let's extend his rehab assignment one more start so it's May 8th instead of May 3rd or whatever. So you're going to get Griffin Canning back into the rotation.
Yeah. Or
back in.
Yeah, in.
I feel like for Nick, right, like, you know, no updates is pretty classic. I would not expect Nick Pivetta to be back before the All-Star break, to be completely honest. Like, I think that's a healthy way to look at it, because I've watched this baseball team enough. I can read, even though they don't admit things, I could read the writing on the wall. You know, they are very interesting about how they talk about injuries. If you're a new Padres fan, they're not going to go out and say, hey, Nick Pivetta's cooked, right? They're not going to admit that. They're going to be like, oh, Nick's rehabbing. He's working. He's trying hard. He's going to get back on the bump. I just don't expect him to pitch, you know, before July 15th. And I think in a weird way, looking around baseball and seeing how this team's playing, I'd much rather have a healthy Nick Pivetta, quote unquote, as healthy of a Nick Pivetta as we can get for the second half of the season, then rush him back in May, you know, May 15th, and he's out for the entire year, right? So if we can, I've seen this enough. I obviously, with Joe Musgrove in 2024, there's a lot of instances, right, where you think this guy, oh, he's going to be back for the playoffs and all this stuff. It's like, guys, I'd be extremely cautious, and I know I like to be the positive person always and be very optimistic. Pitching injuries are very, very scary, right? And it's hard for me to stay with 100% confidence that both Joe Musgrove and Nick Pivetta are going to come back, pitch to the level that I know that they could pitch at, and we're going to go into the playoffs with a healthy rotation. I just don't think that's going to be the case. So if that isn't the case, we're getting new owners. You know, if the boys keep playing good ball for another month or so, that's when I think you could start looking and trying to make a move. Someone mentioned today, I think the Royals lost again. Chris Bubik is an interesting name. There's a couple names out there of guys who, if their team is really not doing well, right now it's early. May 20th is not as early as April 20th, right? You start getting around that June time. That's when I think some teams that know they're not going to be competing that year, you could probably go and get one of these expiring pitchers to come in and real MLB pitchers. No disrespect to some of the guys that we've had start on our team, which they're hanging in there. But underlying metrics, right? Like Germán Márquez, we call him the prayer. I pray he gets in, I pray he gets out. And, you know, hopefully he keeps going. Matty Nux, tough first start. But we'll see what happens. Walker Buehler's been impressive, though.
Here's Corey. This is hilarious.
Kev, you like that nickname? You got to put it in the article, man. I don't know.
I'm laughing in spite of myself. You know that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Here's what I would say.
No comment.
It's less about ownership and more about who is heading baseball operations in terms of things can just happen. Nobody expected Dylan Cease. They traded for when they got Dylan Cease, timing-wise. Nobody expected Luis Arraez, timing-wise. That's not really like an ownership thing. I'm sure ownership plays a role. Of course they do. Ownership plays a role in everything. But it's your baseball operations that affords you the opportunity to even do that. Like, ownership isn't going to their baseball operations. The owner of the Yankees isn't saying, hey, it's May, let's trade for Luis Arraez in that example. So I wonder what role ownership is even going to have in season, truthfully. You've got monumental...
It's about what do they have to give up and what can they get? Because you're right.
Because ownership isn't acquiring assets for you, right? I mean, you're not going to have more assets in your system. Because
if you have more money, you don't have to get rid of Cruz Schoolcraft. Think of it that way. If you are able to pay more of the contract or get a higher guy, then you maybe don't need to give up Leo DeVries. You know, that's where we're at. Yep. Zero doubt that AJ Preller, look, they were in spring training talking about, we don't have to wait till the deadline. We'll watch these pitchers for a couple months, and then we'll move if we have to.
Hey, if not, guess who has a 1.42 ERA in San Antonio right now in 12 innings? Miggy Mendez, not looking too bad. I'm not saying it's early. It's 12 innings. He didn't have a great spring, but
you know, someone was talking about him the other day, someone in the organization, and they were very, very interested and complimentary. So
he's a fun guy to watch when he's on. I've watched a couple, obviously in the spring, but I've watched a couple highlights on Twitter, and he's got some energy on the bump. He seems like a guy that, hey, is he going to come up and be, you know, rookie of the year? Probably not. But if he comes up and gives us two or three good starts and we see something there, I hate to say trade bait, but that's also, this guy can pitch very similar to a la, you know, a Stephen Kolick, a Ryan Burgett type of thing, where, you know, if you give me in May and June, seven starts at like a 3.8 ERA, that could be a piece that other teams are like, hey, the Royals look and they're like, I want that, right? And so it'll be interesting. I do love that our baseball operations, having AJ at the helm, right? There's nobody who is thinking about this more than that guy, right? There's a lot of teams who I feel like some of their GMs are not focused on that. AJ, especially with how the team's playing, I am not surprised that he is probably wheeling and dealing, or at least trying to wheel and deal a little bit. And I have have a good feeling some moves are going to be made, you know, sooner than later.
Hey, Matt, I wanted to say, like, you had a good read on the Padres and their injuries. And I also want to say, like, they're super cautious. And about Joe and Nick, I honestly can't think of two guys, because you were spot on, like, that, hey, might not be very smart to think they're going to come back and be at their top end. But I can't think of two guys who are good enough, smart enough, tough enough to come back at 80% in September and help a playoff team. There are weird ways to piece together your team at that point and to get through the postseason with crafty, good veterans that can give you a certain amount of innings. And I think, I mean, that might be a small thing. That might be something that doesn't come into play. But if you're going to have two guys that you're questioning, I think Joe Musgrove and Nick Pivetta are two good guys to have.
Yeah.
I agree. And it's also, you want to see.
They're badass. Those two guys are really, you don't want to get in a fight in a dark alley with either one of them.
No, well, that's what I'm saying too, is like, especially Joe, right? And Nick has been awesome. Nick has been a great Padre in his, you know, year and a half with the squad. And I know that hopefully he could come back, show he's healthy, and get a huge bag in the offseason because he deserves it. He's been really pitching well. Joe's a very interesting, you know, case study, right? Obviously, throws the first no-hitter in San Diego Padres history. He is a San Diego native. He's great for the community. Seems like he's a great person all around. Obviously, hasn't lived up to his contract that he's had so far. A lot of it is injury-related. There's no one I want to get healthier and to show and really, you know, have a great postseason and come back and have a great little end of his Padres, you know, contract than Joe Musgrove, because you know he wants it, right? And it's tough because he hasn't, you know, sometimes health is it really comes down to the fact of, like, you know, the best availability is availability, right? And he's or the best ability is availability. So I really hope Joe comes back and pitches. I just don't know if it's going to happen, to be completely honest. Just, and it, you know more than I do, but I just have seen this story, you know, my entire life with pitchers. And the least, the amount I've heard about Joe Musgrove so far this season is concerning. I haven't really heard anything about him, right? It's like, oh, he threw three innings in spring training against Great Britain. And since then, you know, we haven't really heard anything about Joe, and it's April 20th. Usually when you hear, oh, he's going to a rehab assignment, or he's doing this, or he's throwing bullpens, you haven't heard anything. So that usually takes a little while for a pitcher to ramp, kind of ramp up. It's a realistic thing that he's probably going to miss at least till the All-Star break, if we're lucky. So, you know, I hope he comes back, but, you know, it's obviously been tough, and there's probably no one that feels it more than Joe, right?
I couldn't, I would be blown away if he doesn't come back at some point this season.
That's good enough.
And I would be blown away, but that you're correct in everything you say. It's not going to be soon. We can read into that we haven't heard anything, but I'm telling you, like, the Padres are so cautious and so conscious that they have a good team, and that not only they have a good team, but, like, look, if we're not good enough to get in position without these guys, like, what are we even doing? Let's get in position, make sure that Joe Musgrove is healthy enough to, you know, once he gets on the field, stay on the field. So there's a lot that's going into this slow playing, and I'm that's my word, slow playing of Joe Musgrove.
I think it's one of those examples of, like, it's just going to be hard to count on him. I'd be shocked if he didn't pitch. There'd have to be another circumstance that presented itself for him not to pitch.
Yes, both are true. But
on the other hand, it's like, are you really going to count on Joe Musgrove? Now, you need to count on Nick Pivetta somewhere in the second half of the year. It's like the Dodgers manual is sit a guy for 3 months, but get him back healthy. There's less tread on the tire, you know, on the arm. And we're going to be just as good when we need to be good. We don't need to win 111 games. We tried that strategy. It didn't pay off in terms of winning World Series. We can win 99 games and win World Series. Edwin Diaz being out for most teams would be impactful for the Dodgers. I mean, who knows what impact it really has if he's available for them in the second half of the year. So it's just interesting. I would say, like, the modern baseball play on injuries, especially with these teams that are loaded with resources, is like you navigate them. Like the old days of, like, is this going to be the Mariners team that wins 116 games? Is this the best team in baseball history? I don't think the teams care anymore about that designation. I think they understand how challenging it is in October. You just got to get there healthy, easier said than done, even if you know, have a feel for how to do it. But I don't think anyone cares about winning 116 games. I think, you know, and that would include the Padres. Honestly, who cares? Get into the postseason, be healthy, and then take your chances if you're healthy.
Try to get that four seed, man. Try to get that four seed.
Yeah, four seeds.
And I don't think it's a loser take, because I know some people are like, oh, you don't think you're going to win the division? Hey, if we win the division, I will be ecstatic. I think that's fantastic. But realistically, I probably don't think we're going to win the division. I do think this is a playoff team. And we saw last year, going to Chicago, you know, you're playing on the road. The Wrigley fans are all there. We also saw in 2024 how easy that was to be a kind of broken down Braves team. You want to have that four seed and then go in hot against, you know, whoever that next team is. So I think this is a playoff team, and I do think they're going to make the moves. If Nick's not healthy, if Joe's not healthy, I trust our front office to make the moves to hang in there.
Let's get to some of these super chats, guys. If you are here, please subscribe. About 80 subscribers away from 2,000. So thank you for hanging out tonight live or on replay. Thank you for the super chats. If you're here live, if you're here on replay, we appreciate the super thanks as well. So let's get started here. These came in earlier. Some are coming in right now. This is a loyal viewer of the wrap-up show at HBBV, whatever. Thank you for the super. He says, can't be over Dalton rushing. He goes on to also say, Kevin Acey is my goat. Which is very kind.
One of those things is true.
That's hilarious. What do you guys make of the rushing comments about the Rockies swinging first pitch is fishy? Like, A, if you really have something, are you saying it publicly? And B, aren't you, like, crying over spilled milk? You're the LA Dodgers. Are you really going to play this game with Colorado because you lost a couple of games at Coors Field?
are you really going to accuse Manny Machado of throwing a ball into the dugout or you're throwing a ball at the manager? Look, I don't know. On that kind of stuff, I honestly never know the truth. I never know the truth. I bet you the Rockies have got something.
I can't wait for that first Dodgers-Padres series is all I'm going to say. Because you hear those comments and they're saying that against the Rockies. Obviously, the Pods are playing good baseball. You go on any Padres stream, I see it right now. You got a lot of beef being talked between these two teams. They were hoping that the Pods would be out of it already. The Pods are playing some good ball, so I'm really hoping that we're both playing neck and neck and both playing some good baseball come May, because that first series is going to be electric.
It will. Mime Junior Ruiz, thank you for the super chat.
Gets me right here that people are buying into Campy. I don't have any idea how long this is going to last. What I am seeing is the growth of a kid and an organization that poured into him, and I think that's really cool. Just wanted to say that.
I mean, I'll admit, I thought they were trading him to the Reds for cash at the deadline last year. Yeah. I thought it was done. I thought it was
like
over.
Tip money. Yeah.
I thought 50K. See you later. You're going to Miami. And it's worked out, obviously, to start the year. Mime Junior Ruiz, thank you. Says John, Matt, and Kevin have VAR.
I love that. Eyes above replacement, baby. Shout out Mime. He's a good dude.
Appreciate you, man. Irie Fan Geek, appreciate you as well with the super chat. He says, Nola got a homer in Mexico. If Tatis can't get a home run there, then he's in trouble. He says, get Woods on here on her first time and call it the Ultimate Collective.
Oh, the Ultimate.
Okay.
It'd be like, Tatis got a home run opposite field, 38 degree launch angle, 95 miles an hour. That was his home run, his first home run in 2023. Remember, he's coming off the suspension. He got that in Mexico City. Like, that is a pop-up in most ballparks. The Austin Nola home run was a line drive to dead center. Like, it just kept going. That's probably the home run that stands out to me, besides Brandon Crawford's, 455-footer and Nelson Cruz about to be DFA'd going, like, 5 for 5. Those are the things that stand out to me from Mexico City.
Mexico City's awesome, man. I'm excited to watch. And Kev, you're obviously going, right?
You talk about VAR, like, that the players – like, players always talk about, oh, this place was so great, well, you know, because that's what they're supposed to do. Mexico City was kind of a pain in the ass for them, to be honest, because, like, Mexico City is just kind of a pain in the ass to get around. It's just, like, big city, New York City, whatever. They loved the vibes at that ballpark.
Dude, yeah. Mexico City, that place is, it's unbelievable. To your point, it's like New York. It's like Tokyo. Getting from point A to point B in Mexico City, getting from wherever I stayed in Mexico City to that ballpark took forever. That place is massive, but it's a really cool scene. I don't know if you even talked about expansion. You can't, though. It's 7,300 feet. I'm sorry. Like, you cannot have it's hard enough having a team in Denver. You cannot have a team playing in Mexico City unless you want to see all kinds of baseball records.
I wish I was able to send the series this weekend. But yeah, anyone that's going, any Pods fans, man, bring the energy, because that is a special city. It's like tropical New York.
Yeah, and the ballpark is cool. Like, it's like a cross between a minor league park and a major league park. Like, the 20,000 seat type stadium is pretty neat.
Food's great at the ballpark, by the way.
They sold out of
food too.
Every merch item was gone in like 5 seconds. Like, I got in the ballpark like an hour early and everything was gone. Robert, appreciate the super chat. Says, should a part of us have hoped Miller transitioned to a starter? We touched on this earlier. Imagine what could have been Miller, the dominant ace of our staff.
I hear it. I do. I don't think Mason actually gave it much thought beyond, hey, that'd be cool, because he knew that injury risk goes up. He don't mess, like, I think it was Matt said, don't mess with perfection. Like, I don't think it was really ever really a serious thing. It was a, hey, let's explore this.
Yeah, it's a good idea, right? Everybody wants to think about
it.
It's really fun to think about, but I think John said it earlier. If it's not broke, don't fix it. Right. I really enjoy hearing Korn in the, blast throughout Petco Park in the ninth inning, and everybody start like kind of fake moshing in the stands. And you have this guy go in knowing he's going to shove. That's pretty electric. If he was a starter one day, that would be cool. But right now, I'm just going to enjoy watching him pitch and enjoy watching him save some games for my favorite ball club.
You can still get that if he starts, if he just goes nine innings every single time.
So, I mean, that is true.
Like
that
everyone expects. Jonathan, appreciate you, man. He says the Rockies – did you guys see this? The Rockies trolling the Dodgers with the fishing reel celebrations? I mean, that is ridiculous, dude. The next day after – that's good on them. Good on them.
Yeah, actually, they do have a different vibe, the Rockies do.
They do.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. They do. They still make mistakes. They're not very good. Their bullpen's atrocious. They have, you notice that right away. They have a different vibe.
Yeah, they got some fun batters, right? That TJ Rumfield guy, I think, hit a home run today. That ball was absolutely crushed. It should be a fun series. You know, it's hard. Hey, it's hard to win a series at Coors Field. So hopefully the boys can take 2 or 3 before we go to Mexico.
All right, here's an interesting question. If you guys want to entertain El Cajon Wizard saying, thank you, man. He says, who are all three of your favorite non-Padre baseball players, current and all time? DSG brought me here, by the way, and now I'm a huge fan of Kevin Acey, too.
What about John?
Hey, Matt, see? Yeah.
Come on. Nah.
You guys want to throw
Matt,
out
some... who's your favorite player?
That's a good question, man. I'm trying to think right now. You know, I actually really liked those Red Sox teams when I was growing up. So not to age you guys, but 2004 was a big, you know, the 2004 Red Sox, 2007 Red Sox. I liked Jacoby Ellsbury before he became a Yankee. I thought he was pretty awesome. I would say, other than Jacoby, man, let me think. Who's a non-Padre growing up? I liked Ichiro. I thought Ichiro was really cool. And Shane Victorino was awesome. Shane Victorino was my guy, the Flying Hawaiian. I thought the Flying Hawaiian had VAR. It was always fun to watch him. I don't know. My whole family's from Philly, my extended family. So he was probably my favorite Philly, especially that 2008, 2009 team that made the World Series. I also liked Cole Hamels because Cole Hamels played in my little league too. So I know that's four, but I would say those are off the top without thinking. Those are the four that came up.
Cole Hamels sat across the aisle from me on the other day on my flight to Philadelphia. Yeah.
Nice.
Good guy. I grew up loving Reggie Jackson, and now I cannot watch enough of Aaron Judge. He's a machine and an incredible hitter. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's a machine. He's a video game player and also just a really, really good hitter. And I am blown away that he can play the outfield as well as he does at 7'4".
Yeah,
man, that's a really hard question, to be honest with you, because it leads you down like a lot of different paths.
I like grinders too. Like, some of my favorite players are not big guys. They're guys the Padres see 3 or 6 times a year, and I'm like, oh, I'm so stoked to see kid who played for the Diamondbacks. He was he seemed like the kind of guy you loved him if he was on your team, Josh Nelson or something. I don't know. I love grinders.
I liked when he came up. I thought Ellie was like the next Toddy, Ellie De La Cruz.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it really transpired or not. I just like his swag and his energy. And again, he wasn't on a New York or LA team, but was he going to kind of transcend or be the face of the sport? Not necessarily. In terms of going all the way back, I mean, this is actually a guy that, again, we're familiar with here, but is most known for his time, obviously, with Oakland, is Ricky Henderson.
Yeah.
As someone that's 45 and growing up watching Ricky Henderson be Ricky Henderson, and I'm actually probably a little young, truthfully, for some of the crazy heyday Ricky Henderson stuff, this is a guy, again, doing things that others weren't doing. I always love that. What we're seeing with Miller, what you're seeing with Wembanyama. Sometimes you just see somebody like LeBron James, that doesn't look normal. You know, Ricky Henderson was doing on the bases, that was abnormal. I always kind of respected that. That's what I liked about Tatis when he came up. I'm like, what he does is special. The Tatis slides, the swag, the energy. He just didn't look like the other players. I've always loved Tatis, by the way, even though I'm very critical now of Tatis. He's one of my favorite players ever to watch, despite the fact that it hasn't gone the way I actually expected it would going back to 2019. So it's a great question, but there's a lot of different ways you could go with it.
Can I say this? One of my favorite players to watch, I couldn't wait till the Padres played this team, Justin Turner. Loved him.
JT, he was a killer. I also think now that I got a couple of seconds to think about it, currently, without a doubt, Jose Ramirez, J-Ram.
Oh,
almost a future. Almost was a Padre at a point too. number one reason why I love Jose Ramirez, other than that he's a fantastic baseball player and pretty funny. He is as real as it gets. Reminds me a little bit of Tony Gwynn in the sense that, you know, he sticks with one team, takes a little bit of a pay cut to stay in Cleveland. He's going to have statues outside that stadium. He is a top five MVP guy every single year. Extremely valuable, extremely durable. Doesn't seem like he's missing a step. He's awesome. Like if there's one guy I wish would have been a Padre one day, it's probably J-Ram.
You should love him and hate him because he was going to be a Padre and he decided that he and his wife didn't need that much money. You know, $180 million was fine and they were going to stay in Cleveland because Crazy. He was going to be a Padre. So,
Yeah, that would have been pretty awesome.
He might be the best player in baseball in some ways. I mean, like he can do basically everything.
He's awesome.
BDESD, thank you for the super. He says, since Feliciano bought the team privately, do you think he'll just let AJ cook like Peter did? I feel like Lacob would have micromanaged AJ like crazy. What do you think in terms of just having a new owner, Kevin? You wouldn't expect, I mean, again, someone like Preller's under a multi-year deal. You're not expecting any type of change, obviously, when Feliciano is put in place.
No, but I don't know that there's apps. I don't know that there's any way to tell. Like I was wondering that AJ he's built up cachet. Peter loved him. Ron loved him. Ron gave more pushback. AJ learned from Peter. Okay. From Ron. Okay. If you say no, a no isn't a no. A no means I need to phrase the question differently. And that's a good boss worker relationship. Then he was able to really sway Peter, and Peter had crazy ideas of his own. And then, you know, AJ had to learn how to work under a budget. But all along, all of those guys trusted and knew AJ. So I was actually thinking about this question today, and I don't have an answer for you, but to me, it's like one of the fascinating questions. Will the new control person, Jose Feliciano, come in and be just so willing to say, yeah, AJ, this makes a lot of sense. As long as we can make the books work and all this, yes. Look, AJ Preller could sell ice to Eskimos. He really could. He's that good at kind of working people because he's relentless. So I think the answer is yes, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think, you know, you come in, right? I think it's Bill Simmons has a kind of like new owner theory, right? Where you buy a team and you want the fan base to like you, right? Obviously, you're new owners. You're coming in to a team that sells out every night, that just had a beloved owner, obviously passes away, his brothers, everything like that. But, you know, if you were to ask the average Padres fan with the last name Seidler, people are like, yeah, Peter Seidler is, you know, the greatest thing to ever happen to the Padres. So you're coming in. It's not like you're coming in and buying some like rote, small franchise that isn't really doing that hot. Like you're really buying a big asset in a market that's really like baseball heavy right now. I have a feeling you're probably going to want to make some moves that get people on your side. You know, hey, people don't know him. Private equity, the two words, private equity, instantly the average fan is like, red flag, red flag. I saw what they did to Chipotle. I see what they're doing to Jersey Mike's. Private equity is coming to ruin everything I love. No, hopefully Jose Feliciano and his wife, Kwanza Jones, can come in, let AJ cook a little bit. Make some moves at the deadline. You don't have to. And by cook, it doesn't mean give Lucas Giolito $100 million. It means let him make some moves. Hey, if like you mentioned, Kevin, if you got to trade for a guy like a Chris Bubik or a Joe Ryan or a Sandy, eat some of that contract, right? Hey, we got a little bit of dough now. Maybe you don't have to trade Cruz Schoolcraft. Maybe you don't have to trade Jorge Quintana. You know, as ownership, hopefully he allows AJ to make some moves and, compete for a World Series because – and I know it's, hey, don't drink the Kool-Aid. It's April 20th, whatever. I watch a lot of baseball, right? I watch, probably my fiance would say, way too much baseball. That being said, I'm looking around the league. The AL sucks. The AL sucks. There's really, I mean, the Yankees are a solid team, but the AL is not doing anything to really show me, oh, this team is going to be great this year. The National League, the Dodgers are fantastic. I mean, the Braves are good. Are the D-backs that great? The Padres are just as good as pretty much every team not named the Dodgers right now on paper. And so far this season, I think this is a year where you put your chips in, right? Especially Manny's not getting any younger. I think Jose knows that.
Here's the thing, too. It's private equity is not buying the Padres, even though the perception, if you make your money in private equity, I mean, Peter Seidler owned an equity firm. You know, I mean, it's how he acquired his money. It would be one thing if a firm was buying it and it's like faceless.
Yeah.
Again, every team has a chairperson, so nothing is faceless in baseball. But, you know, like Guggenheim, or, you know, you put these large corporations behind something. This sounds to me more like an individual that acquired so much wealth that is now taking that wealth and making it like their project, so to speak. So I do feel like, because I said that the other day on the wrap-up show with Jim, or maybe Jim even did. We're like, this is P. Like, no. He acquired his money through P, but it's an individual's purchase. It's not backed by this firm that's in Santa Monica.
So, hey, if you spend money, that's all that matters, right?
Still, we don't know. We don't know exactly how much he owns. Doesn't matter. He'll be the control person. Doesn't matter how much he owns. He's going to, you know, own more than 14%. But we don't know. I have said that people in the organization are highly optimistic. And I think there's reason to be, but I just do want to caution. We don't know.
Let's roll through a couple of these supers remaining. Oliver, thank you. Says, John, don't forget 50 Tatis bombs and we're shaving Jim. Yeah, his head. And he said 60. He doesn't have to worry at 50 either. He doesn't have to worry at 40. If Fernando Tatis Jr. hits 40 home runs, I'll delete this channel. No, actually, I won't do that.
I 40 would be insane. 40. But maybe in a week I'd say no, but I don't know why. I could see him having a 5 home run week in Coors and then in Mexico City. Yeah. He's hitting the ball so hard, man. And like, I think it's all mental with him. It's always been all mental. He just needs one.
Matt's here to keep us real, John. Matt is here to keep us real.
I actually think it might be the opposite, but
if he has a 5 home run week, I hope to see it. I want to see it. Wes says we can win 90 with mid starting pitching plus strategic bullpen days. Yep. Thoughts on that potentially?
Yeah. And then, like, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And then, what does that mean? Like the conversation we had earlier, like, you know, what does that mean? It's who do they get at the trade deadline? And I'm just going to assume that they're the guys they have and the guys they have coming back and whatever Nick and Joe do, that they're going to need to make some moves at the trade deadline. Easy. And that could be a starter. That could be another back end reliever. And then we're watching different things in the playoffs. So I'm going to let it develop. But absolutely, this team's good enough right now, as long as Marquez, Buehler, you know, Canning, right? Like Michael King, I think once he gets his stuff down, we're kind of overlooking how well Michael King has pitched while not being very good.
Yeah,
so I think they're a 90-win team, sure. I mean, yeah, they're an 87-win team.
Yeah,
Let's do a little bit of rapid fire here because this is going long. Saquon says, you think the prayer Marquez sticks around like in the rotation?
I think he's been a number 5 starter. I think he's up to, he hit 97. If you're going to go, if you're round up, I think he hit 96.5 his last 2 starts. The curveball looks really good. There have been, 2 of the last 3 games you couldn't argue with where he was putting pitches for the most part. Like, I think he's a number 5 starter. I think it's a good question. That's the beauty of this thing. We don't know. That is one of the big questions. Will Germán Marquez stick around?
Well, Randy V was a gimmick starter last year, right? Until he wasn't. Germán, give me another 2 or 3 months of hanging in there. You go from this guy, whatever, to, oh man, that's 14, 15 starts at a 3.7 ERA. You know, that's all. Hey, just keep giving me innings and keep the game. Matt Waldron on Friday night did not keep us in that game. That wasn't great. You need to keep the team in the game. I don't care how. Mm-hmm. If you want to stay in the rotation, you give us a shot to win. I'm not expecting you to go complete game shutout. It's as simple as that. And Germán, so far, has he been getting a little lucky? Absolutely. But he's keeping us in the game.
Robert says, ESPN article mentioned Morahone being a trade piece. Why?
When? Why? What? Huh?
Yeah.
Didn't an MLB Network analyst say that moving Tatis to second was part of a trade piece? Like
Harold Reynolds.
Don't get me started. Yeah. I didn't see that. I don't know trade piece for what? Like Garrett Crochet and Roman Anthony? Like, what is Morihone a trade piece for? That would be my response to that. I mean, besides that he's absolutely loved, not that you don't get rid of players you love,
right,
but when you have a what is now a 101 mile an hour sinker with Morihone's other stuff and his makeup and your strength of your team is your bullpen. One thing, I don't believe face value. I think AJ Preller tells the truth. I'm saying that he's careful about how much truth he tells. But he, when he talks about his bullpen and he talks about that being the strength and not wanting to mess with that, I believe him.
I think there's these weird narratives, especially in the national media, that they still don't really believe the Padres could be having another good season. And because of that, they're thinking, oh, new ownership, whatever. They don't see what's really going on. You watch an average baseball game now, you go watch the Twins home game, there's no one in the stands. You go watch, you know, the Nationals, you go watch some of these teams. Nobody's at these games. You go watch a San Diego Padres game, we could be playing the Savannah Bananas, and that place is packed, man. It's packed. The energy's high. The team, it's the city is all in on the Pods. And why would we trade a beloved player from the fan base? The team loves Adrian Morihone. And then just if you look at the statistics, I know his ERA is kind of out of whack. He's one of the unluckiest pitchers in baseball so far defensively too. Made some bad plays on that side. Adrian Morihone is just a great player, like great homegrown talent. A team that's, you know, competing for a playoff spot doesn't trade one of the best left-handed relievers, if not the best left-handed reliever in baseball. So that's a dumb article, in my opinion.
I don't dismiss trade. I've learned. I've been burned. I've been terribly wrong before because AJ Preller will do anything. And one of the things that happens is AJ Preller talks about everything with people, right? So whether it's true or not, like, oh, did Adrian Morihone's name come up? Possibly. But I don't dismiss out of hand anything, but this one I'm going to dismiss out of hand.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's kind of like you spent a lot of time putting this pitcher in a position to be doing this for your organization. Yeah, it's not the perfect time, you wouldn't think. Actually,
if he gets traded, you're going to love this trade because it's going to be phenomenal for the
Yeah, Warriors exactly.
If Adrian
exactly
Morihone's right part of a trade, that's you're what gonna, I'll say. You're going like, to be like, oh my gosh, can you believe what the Padres got?
Yeah. Exactly. Brady wants to know 2026 Padres hot takes. I'll say Tatis homers this year. That's my hot take. I could see him hitting a home run this year.
My hot take is Walker Buehler ends the season in the rotation and gives us a pretty solid 2026 where we realistically look at ways to bring him back in 2027.
Wow.
Is it a hot take to say that Jackson Merrill's not this bad and the Jackson Merrill hit 25 bombs like that? I don't know if that's a hot take, but I'm not really a hot take guy. But Jackson Merrill needs to stop swinging at waste pitches, and he knows it.
I have no worries about Jackson Merrill. Manny, a little bit of concern. But Jackson
maybe my
Merrill
hot take will be that Manny gets 28 home runs.
I like that.
Yeah, very
that
hot
is
take
a little hotter. That
my
is
hot take
hotter
is Merrill wins a gold glove for what he's doing in center field.
I was just thinking that the other day is like, I got to tell you, like Pete Crow Armstrong, he is so good. You don't know how good he is when you watch him, and you have to watch him in person to see how good he is. Like that's going to be hard to beat. And there's some good center fielders, but guy keeps robbing home runs. It's like, how do you get any better than taking away home runs?
The one Saturday was an unbelievable play.
Yeah. He's a special talent.
And then finally, Sour City says attendance makes this team worth $3.9 billion. Padres fans show up for a competitive team. If payroll is cut, attendance revenue drops as well. Bye-bye bye to $3.9 billion.
Spot on, yeah, man.
That's why they were never moving. A part of this, I thought was one of the great quotes I got from someone early in the process, is that they were selling San Diego and the fans as well. Like, that was it. Yes, they're selling the team, but a part of the team has become that attendance, that vibe, and the fact that there is no competition.
What really fires me up, right, is you get this guy, Jose E. Feliciano, and his wife. They go in, are the main kind of buyers of the Pods. I heard Saquon's in on it. Yeah, a lot of people. If you're Jose E. Feliciano, you buy a team right now, right? You spend a lot of money, $3.9 billion. Do not have that in my checking account right now. But you know, Jose buys the team. What a fun team to buy. You got an entire – it's not like you're buying and you're like, hey, we got to build this fan base. We got to do this. No, you're buying something that's kind of rolling right now. Obviously, no TV deal, Hopefully we figure that out with the CBA or anything like that. But you win one World Series, man. If this guy, let's say the Pods go on a heater in the playoffs and we win our first World Series, and this guy's the owner, you instantly, for your family, your kids' kids' kids are San Diego legends. You're buying a team. You're not buying the Pods when Seidler and Ron Fowler had the Pods. You know, you're not buying the 2016 Padres. You're buying a real team that has a shot. And what we've seen in the playoffs, 2024, I will say it till I'm on my deathbed. That team was great, and I still think the 24 scoreless was the most fluke thing that ever happened, but that's baseball. 2025, we saw that World Series, Game 7, inches. That's why baseball is a beautiful sport. You have a real shot. All you got to do is make the dance and have some arms going into it. Jose E. Feliciano, I don't think he's a dumb guy. You don't make that much money. I don't care how you made your money. You don't make that much money if you're a dumb guy. I think he knows what he's buying into. I also think there's a little bit of beef between him and the Dodgers guy, which I'm expecting a Kevin Acey article about that one day, but we'll have to wait for that. But man, I think he's buying a good team, and I can't wait.
Imagine if year one, you buy it and then they win a World Series. Like,
yeah, you just sell it.
Because at that point, you really only played, what role did you really play in that team winning a World Series? That's arguable and probably for another day. All right, let's wrap this thing because it's been too long. Real quick, Kevin, anything you want to let our viewers know about before you duck out?
That I will be in altitude for the next 5 days. So that'll be
fun. Oxygen.
Getting any workouts in?
For sure.
Love it, man. I gotta get on your plan. I gotta get on that. I'm getting married in 6 months. I'm trying to look like AC on the wedding day, man. Everybody in the comments is saying Kevin Acey's looking good. I'm like, I got to get on that wave. I didn't get a lot of minds looking good.
I'm an old man. Yeah, good for you. 6 months, huh? Wow.
We'll see, man. It's going to be awesome. I'm really excited. I'm getting married in San Diego, too, so it should be great.
What do you got, Matt? Anything you want to let the viewers know about?
No, just, can't wait for this this week of baseball. Obviously, the boys are on the road. Hopefully, we can see some home runs. We'll be watching every game. We'll be doing our little post-game shows. And, can't wait to hop on Collective next week and hopefully talk about a 4-1, 5-0 week.
All right, good stuff. You can catch me, Schaefer and Sliwa, San Diego Sports 760, wrap-up show as well, following some Padres games. And we'll be back next week. What day? To be determined. But we will be back next week. All right. Subscribe. We'll be at 2,000 hopefully by our next episode. I think we're approaching 2,000 subscribers. So please subscribe and smash that like button. And again, we will be back next week here on the Padres Collective. For Kevin Acey and Matt Devine, I'm John Schaefer, and we'll see you next week right back here. Thanks, guys.